श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतन की जय, श्री वेणुगीत की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमान हरि बोल। सो गुड इवनिंग, वेलकम। वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग टुडे विद आवर सीरीज ऑन श्री Venugita. Today is our penultimate meeting, so we will be studying the penultimate verse of Venugita, which is verse number 19. Whole chapter, 21st chapter of 10th canto, it contains 20 verses. So today's will be somehow the last verse of the Venugita, in the sense that the last verse of the chapter called Venugita is somehow Sukadev Goswami wrapping up the whole thing to Parikshit Maharaj. But regarding verses directly sung by the gopis, this verse 19 is the last one. From 7 verse till 19, that's the whole duration of the Venugita, although the whole chapter is called Venugita as well. So let's make, before going to the verse, a brief recap of what we saw some days ago concerning the previous verse, verse 18, and the second part of our study of that verse, is we spent two classes for that one, which is the verse in which there is a special glorification of Giriraj Govardhan by Sri Radha herself. Hantaya madrira balaharidasya bharya yadrama krishna chananasparasa pramodam anantanoti saha goganayosta yorjat paniya sujabasa khandara khandamulai. Famous, one of the most well-known shlokas of the whole Venugita, which Sri Radha is basically describing Giriraj and Haridas, the most bhadya, the topmost of all servants of Hari, and then explaining why. Basically, she addresses her friends, and look, the good fortune of Govardhan, who feels pramoda ecstasy by entering in touch with the foot souls of Ram Krishna, who provides offers respects, manam tanoti saha goganayote, not only to Krishna, to Ram Krishna, to the gopas, to the go, to the cow, and paniya sujabasa kandara kandamole, providing water, paniya. We spoke about the different ways in which, last class, which Giriraj serves Hari, according to Jiva Goswami's Gopal Shambhu, 21 upachars, if you will, or instruments or ingredients for worship. So Giriraj being the topmost pujari, clearly. And then we analyze a little bit how all those 21 are somehow summarized in the four ingredients mentioned in the last line of the chapter. Paniya, suyavasa, kandara, kandamule. So paniya refers to water or to beverage, different drinkable substances. Suyavasa refers to very special grass, whether for pitni, for the cows, and so many. Dhruva grass, this ritual grass that is used in sacrifice, or again for cows, for picnic, or suyavasa, no? The su, we mentioned the u was a long one there, which technically was wrong, but it spoke about the adbhut, the surprise of Sri Radha, referring to, wow, this is very, su means special, so very special grass. Or paniya suyavasa, if we put the two of them, water and suyavasa, can mean also water slides, which represented almost like an immediate udipan for Shyamananda here, and many others for sure. And kandara kandamule. Kandara referred to caves, so we spoke about these are not ordinary caves, like black holes that you are scared of entering, but with different weathers, different lightning and colors and rooms and all whatever is necessary for the particular lila. And the context of speaking about the caves, we describe a little bit the life of Abhiram Thakur, who in his previous birth in Krishna Lila was Sridham Sakha. Remember the story? And he was left in one cave because he really took it seriously and was playing hide and seek to the last consequences, and nobody found him for ages, and he was still there waiting, following the rules of the game. And then he was called by Mahaprabhu, come join us in Kali Yuga here and now, but here we are. Come on. And then he became Abhiram Thakur. And Kandamule. Kandamule referred to roots, or to bulbs, or edible roots, or sometimes to medicinal herbs, So we mentioned Govardhana was providing this to Krishna when he was sick, and his sickness mostly has to do with love sickness. So Giriraj will provide some herbal infusion or tea for him to recover from the separation of his beloveds and so on. Also, we mentioned a little bit how the names Ram, Krishna in this verse officially, technically, generally refer to Krishna and Balaram, but for the gopis, and in this case Sri Radha, who speaks this verse, she's mostly focused on Sri Krishna with the two of the names. He uses the name of Balaram to create a situation where nobody will suspect, but Ram for her refers to Raman, the enjoyer Sri Krishna, and so on. And they call themselves Avala, as we mentioned, O woman, a woman, and Avala could mean weak, and we mentioned different ideas of this, not only regarding physical relative weakness, but especially in the context of the weakness they are experiencing here. We are weak in terms that we are not able to serve Krishna as we will like, as Govardhana is doing, and so on and so on. So on. And the classical dynamics, appreciating the good fortune of someone and wanting to somehow be part of that opportunity. Also, we shared some stories. We shared the stories of the origin of Govardhana, which actually was like one story after another inside another story. We went with this Brahmin called Govardhana, mentioned in the Vedas, performing tapasya to save Hari in every possible way, and then granted the birth of as a mountain, and eventually from the mountain womb or whatever, we didn't know yet who is Govardhana's mother in that particular appearance, but father, Dronachala, and how Pulastya came and requested in donation the child. And the whole story unfolded there of Govardhana saying, okay, you can take me wherever you want, but whenever you put me somewhere, I stay there. And before that, we also spoke in the context of Ram Lila, and Ram wanted to make this bridge, and Govardhana wanted to participate, and the conch shell sounded, and another story appeared there with the conch shell in the Bhagavad Gita, remember? But eventually, Hanuman granted Govardhana in Dwapara Yuga, not only you will be used as a bridge, but you will be used as a destination in itself. And Krishna will go to you as a goal, as a prayojan on every single day and walk on your surface. So Sri Radha, while pronouncing all the things in this verse, her mind goes to all these different histories and so on, thinking, oh, Govardhana left his family. He was cursed by Pulastya Muni and he didn't care. He remained in Braj, fixed in service. But we cannot do that. We cannot live our family ties, and they will curse us, but still we are not taking that risk. And actually they are giving themselves, creating the momentum for entering into that particular dynamics of Parakiya Bhav. So basically that's what we saw some days ago. And today we go to verse 19 again. Penultimate verse of the chapter, but somehow the last verse of sung directly by the gopis, and which will be a verse that will wrap up the whole song somehow. And the last verse also will act in that similar function. So, let's read it in Sanskrit first. Last verse with the Basanta Tilak Chanda or meter. So verse 19, we will see basically the main situation or the added feature concerning other verses will be speaking about Krishna tying the cows with his cowherd ropes for milking them and some things in the context of that. So the verse says, Go gago pakaira nuvanam natayorudara venu swanai kalapadaistanu britsu sakya aspandanam gati matam pulakastadunam Niryoga Pashakrita Lakshana Yorvichitram. So, translation says like this. My dear friends, some gopis speaking, my dear friends, as Krishna and Balaram passed through the forest with their cowherd friends, leading their cows, they carry ropes to bind the cow's rear legs, at the time of milking. When Krishna plays on his flute, the sweet music causes the moving living entities to become stunned and the non-moving trees to tremble with ecstasy. These things are certainly very wonderful. That's another important feature of this verse. No? The natures of the different species are inverted by the power of the flute. So let's go to the word by word, as usual. So first line, ga gupa kaira nuganam nayator udara. So gaha is the plural for go. Go means cows. Gaha means cows. Go means cow. Means cow. Gaha means cows in plural. So ga gupa kaira. Gupa kaira means with the cowherd boys. And the kai at the end, because you can say gopa, we already gave some examples as gopika, ambika, here gopa kai. So here means like with the little cowherd boys, you know, indicating a particular moment in their lives. Anuvanam means from one forest, from one vana to other, from one forest to other. So this is indicating the wander in the forest. Nayato means leading, referring to how we'll see the Krishna and the Gopas are leading the cows from one forest to other, to another. Udara. Udara means very exalted. So this will qualify mostly the sound of the flute. All sometimes the acharyas translate the word udara as very liberal. So the sound of the flute is very liberal. So what's the meaning of that? It means that it goes to every species. Makes no distinction, no discrimination, it's very liberal. So this Krishna plays the flute and the sound goes and enters into everyone's ears and heart and so on, in a very liberal fashion. So then the second line, Benu Shranai Kalapadash Tanubritsu Sakyaha. So Benu Shranai, again, this almost appears in every verse. So Benu means the flute and Shranahi means like the vibrations of the flute. By the vibrations of the flute will be Benu Shranahi. Kalapadai means having sweet tones. The vibrations of the flute accompanied by very sweet tones, specific melody. Then comes Tanubritsu. Tanubritsu means among those who hold bodies, technically speaking. Tanu means like body. So Britsu means those who hold. Among those who hold bodies. Basically, all types of living entities, embodied living beings. Sakyaha, in this case, means all sakis, because one gopi is speaking to a group of female friends. So all sakis, what happened with different living entities in connection to the sound of the flute, very sweet sound, very liberal, in the context of what already has been said, third line, aspandanam gatimatam pulakas tarunam. So aspandanam, it comes to the symptoms, immobility means aspandanam. So immobility, gatimatam, which means of those living entities that can move. So aspandatam gatimatam means there's immobility for those who have mobility. Those who move, stop moving with the sound of the flute, they become stunned. Pulaka starunam. And then he says, pulaka, what does he mean pulaka? Pulakair nichitam bapu kada govinda virahe name sugaitam nineshina chakshusa bavrisaitam. Oh yeah, and also it means a horripilation, like hairs standing on end, one of the eight sattvika bhavs, ecstatic transformation. Pulaka tarunam. And what does it mean? Tarunam means trees. So on one side he said the ones who can move, stop moving. And then he doesn't say the one who cannot move, but he says tears or repellate, which is another way of saying those who cannot move. Because the tree cannot move, but they have hairs standing on end, which interestingly, a tree doesn't have hairs. But that's even to imply to which point something is happening regarding movement in the unmovable trees, no? That's a way of saying the moving stop moving, the non-moving start moving. All this by the effect of the magic flute. And the last line gives one extra, again, added feature, very interesting idea here. It says, Niryoga Pasha Krita Lakshanayar Vichitram. So Niryoga Pasha. Niryoga Pasha refers to a pasha. Pasha means rope. To a rope called Niryoga. So Krishna is, we will see, he has a role for binding the rear legs of the cows while milking them. And that call has a name. That rope has a name. No. It's not that I only name my child and maybe my guitar or something. No, my rope. Niryoga. Niryoga. So Niryoga, pasa means again, rope. Krita Lakshanayor. Krita Lakshanayor can mean many things, but the general idea is of those two. So in this verse, the gopis are not addressing Krishna directly by any name, trying to prevent further volcanic eruptions to manifest. So they say of those two, which generally means again, Krishna and Balaram. Over and over again, we have seen throughout the Venu Gita reference to Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Balaram. And means Krita Lakshanayor means of those two who are characterized by. So who are characterized by this Niryoga Pasa, this type of ropes, covered ropes that they use. That's the connection. And the last word is Vichitram, which means, Vichitram is like Chamatkar, Adbhut, Chitra, which means wonderful, astonishing. Especially, I mean, we will see Vichitram can be applied to many sections of the verse, but officially the official translation applies to unmovable living beings start to move, unmoving living beings get stunned. Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, you generally do not experience that when someone plays a flute. And you have to get to that point. And we stop taking dinner because Morley is playing his flute and stunned. Anyhow, so that's the word by word meaning. So let's try to unpack a little bit the content of this particular verse. Again, the last one, sung directly by the gopis. So again, the gopis here are about to finish their song. And again, they are in the village. Krishna is in the forest with his friends, with the cows. That's the constant situation throughout the whole Venu Gita, remember? Krishna and his friends with the cows and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram, friends and cows and in the forest. Gopis in the village. And in that distance, they are seeing in trance, third eye, all that is happening. So they are about to finish the song, and of course this last verse that they are singing is not an exception to the rule that has been ruling all the Venu Gita. So they have another vision of Krishna playing the Venu in a particular situation, as we will see, no? with the milking of the cows and all the different, like, still pictures, frames of the movie that the gopis saw in each and every verse are different moments into that Purvana Lila, Gocharana Lila, Krishna in the morning, in the forest. But all of them, different gopis are having that vision. So this is the main picture throughout the Venu Gita, but with slight variation after each one verse and the other and the other. But the constant is there. Krishna and Balaram, gopas, cows, forest. And on the other side, gopis in the village, dying in Purvarag and longing to participate somehow in that service. So in this verse again, this is happening in the hearts of the gopis. All this particular verse is getting, all that this verse describes is getting manifested in the vision of their hearts. So let's, as usual, take shelter in the commentaries of our Purvacharyas and on that basis also trying to elaborate further. So let me begin with some words from Srila Sanatana Goswami Pad from his Brihad Vaishnava Toshani, commentary on the Bhagavatam. The typical connection he makes between one verse and on the previous one and so on. So one gopi say here according to Srila Sanatana Prabhu, can the glory of Govardhan, fittingly called Haridasa Varja, really be described? Even among moving beings, and non-moving things that abide in Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, even all moving beings and non-moving things that abide in Brajabhumi are most fortunate. So what to speak of Giriraj, who everyone knows is the topmost of Krishna's servants. Even non-moving beings and non-moving objects, if you will, are totally fortunate. So what to speak of he who is Haridasa Varja? I mean, that goes without saying. So their attention goes now to these two varieties of possibilities, moving and moving. And it's a way of including in that all the species that were mentioned before, because already the Gopis spoke about trees and flowers and water and animals and so many things. So in this last verse they sing, they kind of wrap up the whole thing by speaking about moving and non-moving entities, and everyone fits into that category in Vrindavan, basically, with the particular symptoms of moving and non-moving. And one may say, wait, why these entities in Braj are most fortunate? So Sridhar Swami, an ancient commentator on the Bhagavad, he mentions in his own commentary, Bhavartha Deepika, he explains why this is so. So he says, those that have locomotion acquire immobility, an attribute of immobile things. Immobile? Mm-hmm. Okay. And trees, who do not move, have horripilation, hairs and standing on end, an attribute of mobile beings. And what's the reason for this? Because of the sounds, which are sweet notes of the great flutes of those two, Ram and Krishna, who are grazing the cows in every forest in the company of cowherders. That's how Sridhar Swami like kind of paraphrases the whole verse, but like replying to what's so wonderful about this. This is so wonderful about this. So again, as we mentioned, the gopis here trying to hide their prem, invoke the presence of Dauji, the elder brother, and include him in the picture, in the equation, Krishna and Balaram. And not naming them directly, but just saying both of them, because afraid of if we even pronounce the name, who knows what will happen. Even if we say Krishna and Balaram, for the gopis, the names of Balaram, they have been used, which is Ram, it always means Krishna. So for them, it's saying Ram Krishna means invoking Krishna's name twice. So sometimes they try to, let's use Balaram names to deviate the attention for the public. But for them, it intensifies the Udipana, because for them, they are not only calling Krishna once, but twice. So that's a dangerous proposal. So they say, let's say both, them both. But we'll see somehow or other they keep getting more and more absorbed. Today we'll share many interesting things from the commentaries. Srinath Chakravarti. Let's go to Srinath Chakravarti here. The guru of Kavi Karnapur, not Bhishmanath Chakravarti, but other Nath, Srinath Chakravarti. So he says, because of the sounds of the flute, again, continue with the idea above, no? The Gopi say, because of the sounds of the flute of the one who, out of Ram and Krishna, is Udara. So he mentions this idea here. No? The Gopi say, Ram, say those two in the verse, but also the word Udara is there, which refers to exalted sound of the flute. So the gopis here, again, these are not the gopis who have a crush on Balaram. No? But they are the gopis who have attraction towards Krishna. So it's totally inappropriate or rasa-basic that they are attracted to Balaram at the same time and singing about that or whatever. So here the commentators somehow try to accommodate the possibility. So he says, now, the gopis are saying of those two, the sound of the flutes, but then come the word Udara, which means, again, exalted or liberal. So according to Srinath Chakravarti, the gopi who speaks this verse says, because of the sound of the flute of those two, the sound of the flute of the one who, among those two, is Udara, exalted. I mean, it's not that Balaram is not exalted, but for the gopis, Krishna is exalted in a particular way. And he said, it is well known that the sound of the flute is Sri Krishna. Of course we know Balada and all the gopas have their flutes, but if there is like an official flute player in the gang, that's Krishna, no? So he kind of tries to, Srinath Chakravarti explains the verse in this direction, no? So the gopas include Balaram, but actually they are pointing to Krishna's flute playing. That's what is affecting them, basically, what's making them say all that they are saying here. Let's continue with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the other Nath Chakravarti, Vishwanath Chakravarti. So he paraphrases the gopis, and he says, I mean, the gopis say through him, furthermore, like he is very expert always in adding, like, how to say, like, afterthoughts to the verse. Now, the verse says something, but he always includes and many other things in between that help to give more sense to everything that is overtly being said, which is a very great contribution that he's well known for. No? Like, you have the verse, it makes perfect sense, but he will give you a context and what happened in between the other verse and in between the lines of the verse for you to... The verse already has meaning, make sense, but when he gives you all these underlying specific details, now I fully understand what this means. Of course, be careful with saying I fully understand, no? But you feel I'm getting closer to the real intent of the verse. So he paraphrases the gopis here, and the gopis say the implication in the verse, the gist of the verse is, furthermore, when the gopis say anuvanam in this verse, Krishna is going from one forest to another with his friends, exploring all possible forests of Raj. The gopis imply, furthermore, we should not delay in going to meet this flute player. Since he's following the cows, he may soon wander off and vanish into a distant forest. So with this idea, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentioned, the gopis speak this verse. Remember, the Bhagavad Gita is coming to a close, and throughout each verse, the love of the gopis is reaching new heights, and their purvarag is becoming less and less purvarag, if you will. I mean, it's becoming more intense, but at the same time, less in the sense that it's facilitating an eventual union more and more. So this is the last verse, and according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the gopis are saying, just, that's all. I mean, nice song we did, but let's run into the forest now. Because he's in the forest with the cows, who knows where the cows will go. He follows them, and they go into every forest. So he may vanish in some forest, we will never find him again. Let's run now, right now, and meet him. So that's the converging point of the whole Bhagavad Gita, you know, that their separation from Krishna is over, and they get united with him. So that's the idea that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur shares as the intention behind the verse. Because that's important. We have a verse, we have a description of things that are going on, and we can explain the details, and it's very charming. But also there is some like background intention in a practical sense. What will happen behind that? What's the consequence of this verse? Where it is pointing? What's the prayojan, if you will, of the verse? Where the gopis do want their words to converge. Sanatana Goswami, again, in his commentary, he goes to the suffix ka in Gopakai that we briefly mentioned. Gopakai, like the little boys or something like that. We say the suffix ka in Gopakai is expressive of affection in Sanskrit. Remember when we mentioned Gopika or Ambika, you can say Gopi or Amba. I say Gopika, Ambika. So ka, it's connected to the word anukampa, which in Sanskrit means what? Tate anukampam sushamikshamanu. Actually, it's tate anukampam sushamikshamanu. You have to know it, sure. You were studying the verse. You wrote about that. Tate anukampam sushamikshamanu. No need to go to that line. Anukampam. Unjana evadma kritan vipakam. Ibad bapudbir vidadan namaste jivita jumukti pare sadayava. Anukampam. Tate anukampam. Maybe that helps. A little bit of volume might create some. Anukampa means mercy or compassion, basically. Or endearment. Endearment? So the word ka in Gopa Kai comes from the ka in anukampa. So when the word ka is mentioned, it's like in expressive of affection towards those boys, toward the affection that the boys, I mean, of course, we can speak in both ways, no? Krishna loving them and them loving Krishna. And especially that will be connected here to how they love Krishna. Not only in quantity, but in which form their affection takes in that particular situation they are in the forest now. How the gopas express their love for Krishna in the forest, which of course, many ways, but we will see some. And also ka, the acharya's comment, can be connected with sukha. Which means, well, that's easier. Sukha. Joy, happiness. So the how the gopas are happy being close with Krishna, enjoying with him big part of the day. And again, the implication is we gopis cannot. We don't have, they are spending the whole day together with no problem, nobody saying anything. You cannot even look in their direction. Our husbands do not even like the smell of our glances or something like that. So, and also, of course, in connection to how the gopas show affection to Krishna, that's connected with the idea of the very word gopa, which means, pal means to protect, and to protect go. One would say to protect go means to protect gopis, gopas, gokul, golok, to protect the go, the senses, the cows. So one way that is seen here is gopakai means kamis, anukampa means affection, endearment, mercy. How the gopas show mercy to Krishna? And that has to do with the implications of the meaning of gopa, which means he who protects the gopas. That could be also. Gopa means he who protects another gopa. So Krishna is another gopa. So the gopas protect the gopa. The gopa. Gopayanti. Gopayanti means protecting. The action of they, in plural, they are protecting. Gopayanti. So the gopas, when they are in the forest, have the duty of protecting Krishna. And how they protect Krishna, Sanatana Goswami says, with love. That's a nice way of putting it. That's the only thing they have. Only, quote-unquote. They only have love for Krishna, so that's the highest level of protecting someone, no? Showering that person with your affection. And again, the gopis, we cannot do that. We want to do that, the gopis say. We want to shower him, bathe him with waves of affection. That's not possible yet. And of course, the connection of how the gopas are doing that, as we already mentioned, is with Yashoda Maya. Every single day, Krishna's mother, when Krishna is about to go to the forest, there's a whole drama there, as you know. It lasts for a while. No? Yashoda asking Krishna, stay here, do not go. Why you have to go? Wear shoes, stay at home, do not ever leave home, and so on. And Krishna, no, I have, and the boys on the other side, come on, it's getting late, the cow's calling. And Krishna in between Sakya and Vatsalya, no? This tension is there. So finally, Yashoda will agree, okay, go, but all of you, cowherd boys, friends of Krishna, have to sign this contract every single day. You, Sudam, you protect him on the east side. You, Sudam, protect him on whatever other direction. And you take this particular weapon just in case someone wants to attack Krishna. And you, and he, ascribes duties to every single cowherd for the whole day in the forest. So let me share some words about how she's divinely immersed in her Vatsalya. So of course this has to do with this moment when they are in the forest just going there and so on. So Yashoda brought the gopas together before they were leaving. Now Krishna is there waiting, and Yashoda brings all Krishna's friends. And they ask them, she makes them repeatedly take an oath. Oath, you say?
Oath,
like a promise, a vow. You have to promise that you will do your duty, this duty, this duty. So she ordered them. All my sons, remember, she's the mother of all at the same time. Everyone feels just so that this, although they have their mother, she's the mother of everyone. Yeah, she has so much Vatsalya. All my sons, Subhadra, Sridham, Sudham, this Kaneya is very naughty. Kaneya is another name for Krishna. This Kaneya is very naughty. He does not want to stay in the house. Despite having hundreds of servants, he himself wants to go herding the cows. What shall I do? In the forest there are deep rivers, snakes, prickly bushes, demons, and other causes of fear. At this point, the Yashoda is trembling, and milk is pouring from her breast and perspiration and crying. So she tells the boys, promise me that you will never leave him alone. So they say, yes. So she organized the whole array, you circumambulate, make a circle around him so he walks in the middle and you are around him and you be attentive to all the directions. So the gopas make that bow. Because it's a long journey, you will stay long, many hours. And for someone like this, so it's like eons, subjectively speaking. And as Guru Maharaj also mentions, the gopas make that vow, but then they go to the forest, and the more they get closer to all that the forest entails, they kind of forget that vow, and they make another vow, which is, we will never leave the forest. We will not return home today. Make the vow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But eventually, every day they break the vow. So there is also some niyama akshama in Golok Vrindavan, breaking up the vows, accepting of something and not being able to sustain them. But but in another context now, because of the love of the rest of Raj and the need for continuing unfolding the lila and so many things. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his own commentary, he mentioned that since Krishna must travel far because of the unlimited number of cows, he gives joy to all the living beings over a wide area. So this is another way of interpreting anubhanam, traveling around many forests. There are so many cows, you cannot just take a few million, trillion, zillion cows to 2 hectares and we'll remain there and somehow. I mean, Vrindavan offers every possibility, but the dynamic of the lila is such that he goes here and he goes there and he goes there. So the point is, he's giving grace to everyone in every forest, and again, the contrast for the gopis is, except for us. You know, all these explanations and sentences, we can easily finish all of them except for us. Another interesting translation of the idea of anubhanam, which we mentioned, is one forest after another. Sanatan Goswami mentions. He says anubhanam means prativanam. Prativanam means each forest. He says all the forests in the region of Mathura are included. And it is mentioned that sometimes Krishna even goes to some farther forests, and he finds some cows who got somehow lost. But they were not cows from his own herd, but cows from someone else. So he kind of entered into the mission of cow rescuing or something. Mm-hmm. So he started to take them back to their respective homes. So that's also mentioned. And he takes the lost cows and brings them home. Mm-hmm. Mm. Something interesting here in this connection is that while doing this, while walking, here also they're speaking about the sweetness of the flute, Venushranai, Kalapadai. Kalapadai means sweet tones. But some acharyas have mentioned that these sweet tones can come from, of course, Krishna's flute playing, but also there are sweet tones or sweet sound by Krishna's wandering from one forest to another. And that has to do with Krishna's ankle bells. Krishna has ankle bells, as you can see. So when he's moving, the ankle bells, of course, are producing music. So while roaming in the forest, this kala pada can mean sweet tone, or pada, kala pada. Pada can mean song, can mean tone, or pada can mean feet. So that's how the acharyas understand this idea of Kalapada. He has sweet feet, which means sweet sounds emanating from his sweet feet and accompanied by these ankle bells. And of course, the gopis sometimes also can refer to the ankle bells here, because when Krishna goes to the forest, when Krishna returns from the forest, these are the two main moments, as we mentioned in the day, that the gopis can have a glimpse of Krishna at this point of the unfolding of the lila. They cannot meet him at any other moment yet. So they only see him here and there when he's going to the forest, when he's returning for. But as we mentioned, there's so many people at that moment. All Braj is accompanying him when he leaves and dying in a drama, and everyone is going back to life when he's returning from the forest. So it's so crowded. So the gopis don't have like a clear vision, and they cannot just look like this. No, they have to just sidelong glances and be accurate to deal with all the crowd. And Krishna is more reserved when he's with elders. Now, when he's in the midst of Vatsalya camp, he's not behaving like when he's alone with his friends, basically. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, in those moments, we cannot hear Krishna's ankle bells clearly, because so many people and crying and receiving Krishna or saying him goodbye, and we cannot see him, we cannot hear him, and he's more reserved. But now, when he's roaming in the forest with his friends, no elders to limit his movements, then we can, in the forest is possible, basically. You know? So they are hearing that in their vision in distance, but again, they cannot join him. So if we understand, of course, the sound, the sweet tones to the sound of the flute, again, the effect it is described here is the different species invert their natures. Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting point that this verse is making. Mm-hmm. To begin with, Sanatana Goswami again mentions this idea of the trees. He quotes something from the Mahabharata, Tashmat Pashyanti Padapaha, which the trees again represent the unmovable or immobile of the two. Okay, immobile. So the immobile creatures are like all of them represented in the trees here. Many times in the scripture this happens. It is a whole category of being is included in one particular species that represents them all. So he mentions this verse from the Mahabharata, which mentions that even the trees, although they are immobile, they have subtle vision. So they can see a little bit. They don't have eyes like us, but somehow they see in a subtle way. So they are not only, because again, the trees are here described as horripilating and experiencing ecstasy. And he says, Sanatana Goswami, not only by hearing the flute, but they are seeing Krishna with their subtle vision. Sometimes if you have a tree here and you put a wall, the tree will continue. How did he see that? So Mahabharata mentions this, no? Trees have subtle vision, which means don't have like concrete eyes, but somehow they see from some form, some level. So here the trees are not only hearing Krishna, but seeing Krishna. So that adds even more to the uniqueness of their transformation and inversion of natures, and so on. And the gopis, also some implication here is that one gopi will tell the other here, we would like to run after the flute, but we can't do that, because if we start running, we can move, the gopi say, but if we start running towards the flute, out of ecstasy, we will stop running at one point. As the example we gave with Mahaprabhu entering Jagannath Puri, you know? He started running on to embrace Jagannath, but out of another ecstasy, he collapsed and he stopped running. But one gopi said, we would like to run after the flute, but we know what will happen. We will be paralyzed in between, out of emotion. But one gopi will say, but even if we get paralyzed, you see the tree. Tree is always paralyzed, and now it's moving. So we are moving. We are not the trees, but we may get tree-like, paralyzed. But the sound of the flute can make the impossible possible. So we can become paralyzed because of the flute, but the flute can make us move again and reach its main subject, who is playing it. So let's go, basically. Let's go. That's the whole conclusion of this verse is, let's go. So even though we may put some other reasoning, no, but this will happen because of that, let's go. And at one point we will see the unfolding of the Bhagavad and it's, let's go. I mean, eventually the gopis will be meeting Krishna every single night, every single midday. So at that time they don't need to say, let's go. But now in the unfolding of their emotion, they are in that stage which still some shyness is there, some consideration. And all that, of course, is showing us how all these stages in which one is advancing and still calculating and considering whatever, what the environment will say, what will happen, the consequence. But at some point, the love reached such a peak, no more consequences, no more calculation at all. Of course, they are need to see this, but they are given the examples of their own unfolding of their eternal love. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, he describes that, going back to the trees, although they have no hair, remember, the trees here are having hair standing on earth, on end, say, although they have no hair, trees somehow show horripilation. This is understood by the tricky appearance of an outgrowth of bergions. That's a word. Like buds or something, I think, like some blossom or something. Therefore, shaking or kampa, in this case, too, is somewhat indicated. So there's some shaking in the trees. So again, the impossible becomes possible because of the flute. that nature can change. And Krishna says in the Gita, if we want to apply that a little bit to our situation, which in many senses could be tree-like, mobile, it's not moving what it should be moving, or we are moving in the direction we should not be moving, whatever, however you may like to take it. One says we may be like trees, and another says we are not yet like trees. Hopefully we will become like them, acquire the level of tolerance and compassion. So here it is speaking about changing natures. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very difficult to change your acquired nature. But this verse is showing, not impossible, as we said yesterday. Impossible, easy, difficult, in between. I mean, even the flute can make the impossible possible. What to speak of the difficult? It's like no big business for the flute. So it's important. And we generally experience, as I mentioned before, niyama akshama. This is one of the six symptoms of anishtita bhajana kriya, which means unstable practice of bhakti. Niyama akshama means I make a resolution. Like, okay, 2022 is starting. I will make, not to make people make like resolutions for the year. I will do this. I will maintain this. I will continue doing this. And I will attain it. And maybe after the first week, it's like resolution over the wind. Like, next year, 2023, I'll do it then. Sometimes that happens. With good intention, we try to commit to some ideal, and eventually we're not able to sustain that. And somehow it has a lot to do with our acquired nature, which takes us in a certain direction. And of course, it's not that everything about our acquired nature is to be like demolished or something. We are to work with that, not necessarily against. But there are some things in our acquired nature which may be really worthy of transcending as soon as possible. to quote that in romantic terms. Because there are parts of us that are really ugly, they are really ungrateful and exploitative and selfless, self-centered, and that's not us, actually. So the problem is that we keep insisting, that's me, by identification, and you create a monster, basically, and you become public danger. So, and Krishna says it's difficult to transcend some of those things because you may have been hammering on that post for lifetimes. So you really believe, not like we were the other day going in the car to the event in Alma Tranquila, and there were these trees with the, how do you call it?
The barbed wire.
That was inside. I mean, in the beginning it was not inside. When they put it, it was on one side. But they kind of merged together, and it became part of the nature. And the tree thinking, oh, I'm that. I have that. And it's right in the middle of that. So it's not so easy to take that out. You can cut the outside part, but the inside part, is, I mean, how you take that without cutting a tree? So somehow that can happen. No? But again, there's hope. There is a flute. There is a flute. So by the sound of the flute, which of course represents so many things, our nature, that part of our nature that needs to be transformed, can be transformed. That's the idea. No? And that doesn't happen, with any type of musical instrument. It's not that you go to a concert and you go outside the concert, oh, now my nature is still to be transformed. Maybe it's transformed for worse, depending which concert you went to. But generally, it's not that you want to concert, your whole sense, DNA and sense of personality has been inverted for good, just by hearing a musician. But Krishna is a special musician, as we know. So similar to us, as sadhakas, we have to open ourselves to the sound of the flute, to the clarion call of parampara, in other words, to the divine invitation coming from the saintly personalities, and gradually, heart melting will be there. From the rock, remember, Krishna plays the flute. Another example is the rock starts to melt. That's being said. I mean, if there is something that doesn't melt generally, it's a stone. So if the heart is like a stone, Krishna plays the flute, no problem. Say, take the stone 1 minute, and you'll start to, oh my God, what's going on with the stone? It's becoming liquefied. So that's the power of the flute, which again has to do with Harikata, Satsanga, connection with the higher departments. So all this is Vichitram, again, saying this verse. Vichitram means wonderful. It's wonderful. I mean, imagine if you are walking here in Madhavan and suddenly the trees start to move and offer pranam and offer and start to cry and hair standing on end and the cows become like still picture. And try to imagine if that actually is happening, because that's actually happening here. We are not just fantasizing. It's what's going on in connection to the flute. So Sanatan Goswami connects in that way, Vichitram, or wonderful, Adbhutam, Chamatkar, this inversion of natures. Thus, he says, how he explains that, he says, the rise of everyone's special prem is implied in this verse. So, of course, here we are describing what's going on in Vrindavan, to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, all of them are imbued in prem. So that's also makes things easier, transformations easier. So he's saying here, the rise of everyone's special prem. So again, all the species that have been mentioned throughout the Venu Gita are included in this verse. And the rise of the prem of each one of them is implied in this verse, like a wrapping up of every single species mentioned before. In other words, Sanatana Goswami says, apart from the external transformation, the external inversion of nature is not moving, an internal transformation is implied. The external transformation is just a symptom of the internal transformation. The change of nature is not physically only. The tree is moving, not moving, the moving is not moving. You can measure that only externally, but here it says, no. Something is happening internally, and the external is just like a brief aspect of what's taking place internally. Or also, Sanatana Goswami says, and here comes a very interesting part, Vichitram can be connected to the special attire or robes that Krishna has. And then we come to the last line of the verse, which speaks about Niryoga Pasa. Remember, Niryoga was the name of the robe, Pasa. Krita Lakshana also, some acharyas mentioned, although apart from referring these two, Krishna Balaram, Krita Lakshana means these robes have a very special lakshana. Lakshana means attributes. So generally, you don't sing the glories of a robe. No, I mean, robe is robe. But here, nothing is only that. No? So if you speak about the robe, take your seat, take your time, and hear the glories of the robe. No, everything is glorious in Vrindavan in connection with Krishna. So these robes have very critical action, very special attributes. So let's try to unpack just give me some time. Let's try to unpack the idea of Niryoga Pasa. So during milking, again, why do they use these robes? During the milking, sometimes the calves will be a little bit like restless for those of you cowherd boys and girls. You know, what was all this implied? You have been trying to do that or doing that some of these days. So they will, there are some different options that Charya say. They will use this Niryoga Pasa to tie the calf to a nearby post. I mean, while the milking is there, because the calf may become too restless, basically. So they tie them in the way that they keep the faces of the calves in the direction of their mother, so they can maintain their sight of their mothers and not go bananas, as there was a yesterday, not go crazy. So the rope is called Niryoga. And there's another rope. Some acharyas mentioned a different idea. Pasa means rope, and Niryoga is the name of the rope. Or some say Niryoga is some type of rope, and Pasa is another type of rope. They have different ropes. So Pasa will be, Niryoga will be for tying the calves, and Pasa will be for tying the cows who are being milked, for avoiding that they are kicking you when they are being milked. So that can happen, right? All of you can give testimony. So Srila Jiva Goswami mentions, well, at this point someone may make an argument because, I mean, we are in Vrindavan, no? So everyone should be like, cool. Every cow in Vrindavan has this fame. They're well behaved. So why you have to tie them and they may get like neurotic or something. So it's not necessary to tie the cows while milking them. I mean, they won't kick Krishna. No, they love him. But he said, well, there are some cows, a few ones, restless ones, who like to be tied personally by Krishna. They want to experience Krishna having that personal connection with them, especially special connection, personal connection with them. And like when we say when Krishna was picking the cows back for returning, he will play the flute and call. He will come with a japa mala, of different names of the leaders of each group of cows. Okay, this group is here, this group is here, and then this makes sure everyone is here. So he will call the names of each one of the group leaders, but some of the group leaders won't come. They will rebel, but not rebel in a negative way, but they just want Krishna to take special attention on them and call them specially. Come, 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 come. So they won't come because of that. So similarly here, some of them will act a little bit restless, not because they are rajasic in nature or anything, but just they want Krishna to have some special attention on them. So that's why it is mentioned that this Niryoga pasture is useful for tying these cows. And of course the gopis cannot avoid making all sorts of parallel when hearing this. In the same way as Krishna is tying the cows with this Niryoga pasture, similarly, with that robe, Krishna may come someday tie our fickle minds, tie them at their feet, and we may remain at his feet forever. Also, there are some other interesting meanings for Nir Yoga that the Acharyas have given. So Nir can mean uninterrupted. Nir. And Yoga can mean union or meeting. So Nir Yoga means uninterrupted meeting, which basically speaks about the experience of the forest species. When Krishna is entering the forest with his friends, they are entering there for long hours, not for good part of the day. So uninterrupted meeting is about to happen, Krishna in the forest. So that's the experience of the forest inhabitants, if you will. So they are seeing Krishna with this Niryoga pass. Niryoga again means a robe, but for the forest is, oh, Niryoga is coming, means uninterrupted meeting. So Krishna will be here with us for hours and hours. So the forest celebrate this. This will cause an interrupt meeting with Krishna. But of course, for the gopis, that's not happening for us. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary, he describes a little bit some of the attributes of the robes. Again, they are not only robes as we think of a robe. He says, the Nir Yoga and Pasa, speaking of them as two different types of robes, they have clusters of flowers and pearls at both ends. So again, generally you don't see a rope. A rope is, give me the rope. But here with clusters of flowers, precious gems. They are yellow in color, and they are made of silk. So they are not rope as we think of, but they are silken robes. If you want, I don't know if you call something made of silk a rope, but whatever. Silken yellow robes, bejeweled, and decorated with different clusters of flowers. And Sridhar Swami said, these type of specific robes are signifying them, the gopas, as cowherd boys. So in the, how to say, it's like a symbol of their varna. In the Vedic, in the Indian tradition, people will use a certain type of cloth or a certain type of turban in a certain way, in a certain color. And that will mean something. It's not just, I like to wear it like that. But that will help each other to identify, oh, you belong to this group, you belong to this varna, you belong to this. Even today, if you go to India, some ladies from some part of India, they wear the sari on this side, some other ladies will sari on this side. And if you know, I'll say, oh, this is from Punjab, oh, this is from South India. There are these type of things that if you don't know, you're just like, oh, she may like that or something. So in the Lila, there are some social dynamics, social sensibility. So the gopas are wearing different symptoms that show we are gopas. So the gopa boy is like a boy. No, you want to be what you want to be as an adult. As a boy, you start, okay, I have to show that. I want to be that. So these particular robes are defining, if you will, the gopas and their identities as cowherds. So, symptom of their barn, basically. And it's said that like other gopas, Sridhar Swami said, Krishna is tying the nir yoga on his turban. This rope, nir yoga, one of them, he's bringing that on his turban. And the pasha, the other one, it hangs down onto his chest from his shoulders. So you can make a picture of that in your mind. One of the two, he's taking in his turban, that's tied on his turban, and the other one is on his shoulders and the chest. So all the gopas are taking that, but here Krishna specially described entering or in the forest with those. We have something more to say from the purport of Sanatana Goswami and Jiva Goswami for finishing. Sanatana Goswami, he says, mobile beings become stunned and trees have goosebumps due to the sweet flute sounds of Ram and Krishna, which ties them through the rope of love. No, so now comes another layer to the idea of Nir Yoga Pasa, the rope of love. No, like Damodar Lila, similar. His tie, Krishna's tie by Yashoda with the rope. Which rope? Love. I mean, God cannot be tied. He's unlimited, but he's tied. Affection. So, the rope, which is Nir Yoga, in the sense of, again, incessant unions occurs because of it. Or a bond, and that comes an interesting way. How he translates Nir Yoga means this bond is a bond because of which impersonal yoga, Nir Vikalpa, is gone. Nir means, can refer to Nir Vikalpa Samadhi, which is the undifferentiated trance in impersonal realization. And Nir also can mean Nirgata, which means gone. So Nir Yoga means there is a bond, a yoga, a union that will create Nir, that will make the impersonal realization go far away. So Nir Yoga Pasha, basically. And the example is Four Kumars, Sukadev Goswami, these great sages who were fixed in Brahman, fixed in the undeterminate aspect of the Absolute, but when they got caught by the ropes of love, by Krishna's sweetness, Rupa Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, oh, Nir Yoga. Their Nir Vikalpa Samadhi became something else, not something else. Their still picture of reality became movable, dynamic, and loving, and so on. So, in this way, Sanatana Goswami concludes his commentary saying, thus, the substance of this verse is, the gopis imply, alas, these mobile beings and immobile things are lucky. They see him, Krishna, whose attire, such as Nidhi Yoga Pasha, is sweet. But in our case, even just seeing him is very hard to come by. What a misfortune. So let's finish with some words of Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentary. Interestingly, he gives very nice... We are now in the concluding section where the gopis are expressing their lamentation, their comparison with the good fortune of everyone else and their so-called lack of fortune. So Jiva Goswami makes an interesting mention of almost each of the words of the verse and how the gopis refer to those words to express their lack of fortune. So I will briefly mention all, not all of them, but some of them. So the first word of the verse was what? You cannot look. You can look to the notes. The first word, ga, which is cows. So the gopis imply with cows. By this, being a bestower of joy to living entities that are in faraway locations is meant, in terms of being one who goes far, since those cows are innumerable. Like implying, he goes far for the cows and he even goes to even further forest to pick this lost cow from other people, but he doesn't care for us. Basically, we are here on the village and he's going and exploring and going to every single forest, picking lost cows. He's not picking us. We are lost. So for Jiva Goswami, that's the lamentation in connection to that particular word. Now comes another word and a particular lamentation attached to that. No? That's the vision of Jiva Goswami. He's feeling at this level, the last verse, the gopis are almost, again, the pressure cooker is about to explode. So the lamentation of the gopis just starts to overflow in each and every single word of the verse. So then he speaks about anuvanam. Remember, anuvanam means forest after forest. Or Krishna going to every forest. So the gopis say, in addition to going far, he goes to various locations because of a difference of groves. He has the time and patience to go that far. Again, the implication is, but not to come to us. And he picks lost cows who belong to others, but not lost gopis like us. Similarly, then we can make, that's not Jiva Goswami, but we can make that parallel. Of course, we as sadhakas, we could say our senses are lost. Like the lost cows in the forest, our senses, our goal, cows means goal, our senses means goals in Sanskrit. Our senses are lost in the forest. Which forest? Samsara. The forest fire of samsara, repeated cycle of birth and death. So we can remember this particular lila, Krishna going and bringing back home the lost goal from the forest. Oh Bhagavan, please collect the cows of my senses, of my lost senses, and bring them back home, back to your feet. You are Hrishikesh, you are the lord of the senses, so please rescue my senses, engagement properly. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in one section, he comments similarly nicely. He says, sometimes in Vrindavan, some of the calves will separate from the group and will go to drink water from a ditch, they say, who is not very nice water. So Krishna has some cowherd stick with him. He will not hit the cow, the calf, but will just like touch the calf, like bringing him back to the herd and make the calf drink water from the Jamuna. At that time, when the Jamuna, you can drink the water. No? Don't try now. So similarly, the idea is the same. No? Vishwanath will pray similarly. Take me away from the ditch of Prajalpa, make me drink the Jamuna of your words eternally, and make my senses go in that direction. Another word that Jiva Goswami explains is Gopakaya. Gopakaya means like the Gopas, basically, with cowherders. So the suffix ka, remember, is used in the sense of anukampa or compassion on account of the Gopas being objects of affection as his parivar. Krishna, the gopas are part of Krishna's parivar. Parivar means family or also entourage. And the idea, again, the lamentation here for the gopis is only we do not have the qualification for that sort of prem seva. The gopas are his family, are his parivar. We want to be his family. We want to be ultimately married with him. That's what they want. The gopis want that. So when they say the gopas, some attached lamentations. Then we have Nayator. Nayator, remember, means referring to both of them, Krishna and Balaram, who are leading the cows here and there. So the gopis lament here, saying, in going to various areas, their freedom can come about. Remember, when they are in the forest, they are free to do whatever they like, but not in proximity to us. Darn. So remember, in the village, and leading, the word leading is important here, no? Because in the forest, Krishna and Balaram are leading the whole situation. But when they are back to the village from the forest, again, their freedom somehow restricts, because Nanda Baba is the leader there. No? They came back home, father is there, Nanda Maharaj, the king. So Krishna and Balaram will not behave like when they behave by themselves in the forest. They are more reserved, so many elders. But in the forest, they take the lead. The word Nayator means they take the lead. So the gopis imply, wow, that's a unique scene. They're taking the lead. And they act so informally. They do not care for any restrictions. We want to see that, basically. We want to interact with him in that dynamic without any restriction. And of course, they will get that opportunity. It's coming. It's a matter of time. Gopis, please wait, do not die. And that's the prayer of us. No, please wait for a minute. Then, Udara, four more words. Udara, which meant exalted or very liberal, remember, in connection to the sound of the flute. So the gopis say, oh, he gives the highest bliss, again, exalted sound, flute sound, only to those beings in those various areas. So again, all the people in the forest, they are receiving this exalted sound, not us. Tano Bhitsu, of those who have bodies, the gopis lament, which embodied soul might not fall prey to that subjugation, to the subjugation of the food? Everyone who has a body is falling prey of that. And in this case, they are including in the equation, but at the same time lamenting because of not having the chance of, again, actualizing, getting to the consummation of the relationship. Gatimatam, of those who have movement. You go to say, so what could be said about us if we were to travel so far? So we have movement. What could be said about us if we were to go where he's going, you know, to where Krishna is now in the forest? Like in play, we would like, but for some reason still we cannot. So they lament. And last word, Sakya. Sakya. Which means, hey, Sakis, hey, friends, all friends, female friends, the gopis are speaking, remember, revealing their minds in intimacy among themselves. So the idea that the Acharya say here is, interestingly, is that the gopis say, after saying all the things, they say, Sakis, like, all of you two know this, no? Like, when you are speaking, I don't know, I'm speaking with Shyamananda about something for an hour, and at the end I say, why am I even telling you all this? I mean, you know this, you know. And the conversation finishes there. So it's similar like this, no? Like the gopis are singing all these verses of the Venu Gita one after the other and expressing all this, all this, all this. And then the conversation ends abruptly. But you know this, no? End of the Venu Gita. Something like that. That's why after this Sakya, this word Sakya, after two lines, Venu Gita is over. Like that feeling is implied in that word, all friends. And when you open your, like the gopi speaking the verse referring to other friends, all friends, like, you know what I'm talking about. We share hearts, we share experience, you understand what's going on. Or another idea for Sakya is, whom else can I tell this? Whom else will I tell this? I cannot share this with anyone and everyone. All friends. Like, you are the ones who can hear my heart, basically. So Jiva Goswami, after giving these interesting meanings to the word, he concludes with two brief paragraphs. How the gopis conclude their Venu Gita. And with this, we will conclude as well. So he says, therefore the gopis conclude in the following way. This is very charming how he presents the situation. He says, the gopis say, who among those having a body, again, Tanu Britsu, who among those having a body have not fell prey of this thief or hunter, Krishna? Before we spoke of Krishna as a hunter, remember the verse of the deer and the flute? Oh, friends, very clearly, on the pretext of herding the cows, he wanders in the forest with his friends and brother and appears like a cheater. The description of as a cheater is completed by the rope used for binding the feet, suitable to a cheater. These boys have the ropes. The other assists them, protecting their stolen woods, yogurt, milk, and so on. So in their ecstasy of their love, the gopis start to depict the whole scene like as a criminal gang. You have the boss there, the brother next to him, all the other boys, and still something else is to be said. No? And what are the sounds of the flute like? Their tones are indistinct and are captivating like an enchanting mantra. Therefore, only the great flute player is the main cheat here. Others, however, are just his followers, his brother and friends, but he's the main cheat. Consequently, you, like us, when gopi speaking to others, Sakya, you, like us, should not hear his flute, which has a bewitching spell. Otherwise, it is certain that your minds will be caught by those Nir Yoga ropes. So they give this whole idea. Now, Krishna is a thief or a hunter. Flute is the weapon. A thief has to have a weapon. Krishna is a good thief, as we say. Hari, stolen of cards. Again, it seems they are condemning Krishna, but actually it's their way of saying, let's go there. Not like Rupa Goswami sometimes says in the Bhakti Rasamrita, in this famous verse, that if you, oh my dear friend, if you want to take care of your greatest material development and the most beautiful things in this world, do not go to the banks of the Yamuna and do not hear the flute that is sounding there. Something like that. So basically it seems that he's glorifying material acquisition and cautioning you, be careful with Krishna. But actually it's a poetic way of saying, just leave everything and run after that. So of course the gopis here, they seem to be condemning Krishna, but actually they are getting more and more absorbed. So they are just depicting him. He's a thief. So a thief or a hunter, he has a weapon. What's the weapon? Just a dry piece of bamboo. It seems very innocent, but very powerful. So he has a weapon, he has the ropes to tie the victims. And he caught them. He has the gopas are his men. He has an army, cows and calves. And the stolen goods, ultimately the Brajavasis' hearts. So the whole criminal scenario is depicted, no? So that's very nice how this Bhagavad-gita works. Now on top we find there's praise of the gopas, or there's praise of the flute on one level of the verses, but in an underground current, which is the nature of Parakya, it's an underground current, is the crying of the gopis at every single stage and every single verse. So in this way the gopis express their sorrow and separation, their bewilderment in divine love, and they conclude this song here, getting closer and closer and closer to the eventual consummation of the relationship with Krishna. So we'll stop here, and tomorrow we will see the last verse of the chapter, which will be a wrapping up by Sukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, and some interesting things will be also mentioned there that will add to the equation, and we will also make some brief recap of the whole Bhagavad-gita very quickly, like each verse, just to recap, and then we will go to the last one and conclude our series tomorrow. So we'll stop here, offering pranam to the song of the gopis, very powerful, which purify by their strength and depth all universes. So we pray to be sprinkled by that. Vandinanda brajasthrinam padarenum abhikshnasa jasamharika tadvitam punati bhuvanatriyam Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Grantarashri Madhvagavatam ki jai, Shri Venu Gita ki jai, Shri Ekadati ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Pramam, Hari Namo.